Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am Randy Fine, your show host. Today, we have with us clairvoyant medium Tammy Urbanek. And I was actually on Tammy's show back in July, and we talked about my specialty. But today, we're going to talk about what Tammy does and what she feels is important to share with us, and also about her projects that she's working on. So let me, Tammy Urbanek is show host of iHeartRadio podcast Journey for the Truth. And she was born with the ability to see, hear, and communicate with the non-physical. And the family that she was born into was very supportive and also had abilities. And so they encouraged her individuality. Currently, Tammy works with people internationally who seek guidance in their journey of life. So let's get started, and I'll introduce you to my special guest today. Good morning, Tammy.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very glad to be here.
Oh, thank you, Tammy. It's really wonderful to have you. I enjoyed being on your show, and it's really nice to have you. So tell us a little bit about your background, how you came to know that you were clairvoyant and such.
Well, you described it very well just a moment ago, but I did grow up in a family that is very spiritually aware, very spiritually conscious, and my father is a medium. He's a different type of medium. He's what's called a direct medium. And if anyone wants to look that up, his book is called Tide of Change on Amazon. But it was through him that I was able to come to understand I'm also a medium, just of a different kind. And I was told at an early age, I think maybe age 13, that I'm a medium. I didn't have the abilities developed yet, though. I mean, I could see some stuff here and there, and it scared me a great deal. But I didn't really have the skills or the ability to tune into it effectively. That didn't happen until really my early 30s, that it rapidly began developing after I overcame my fear of ghosts and fear of the non-physical. And then I could hear them, I could see them, I could communicate with them, I can dialogue with them. And that's where I'm at now, just this continued dialogue, whether it's with people's spirit guides or non-physical people, typically, or deceased individuals.
Okay. And do you communicate with your own spirit guides?
Yes. quite often. I will communicate with my guides. I have four. And then also my work has evolved to a degree where I communicate with, I just call them beings. They come from a place of sound frequency that I'm still working with. So the name that they might go by, I can't quite, my brain doesn't comprehend it. My brain doesn't register it. So
right.
At least right now. So I call them the beings, and they are higher consciousness, highly evolved, higher dimensional individuals. They're not exactly human. And they have been coming in people's guides to offer even higher guidance than some people's guides offer.
That's fascinating. Now, you also do what's called life energy flow Tai Chi treatments. What are they?
Life energy flow Tai Chi means supreme health or supreme balance in English. It's an ancient healing modality. It's hands-on. It predates acupuncture. But acupuncture certainly has elements in it that is very similar to Tai Chi. Rather, though, Tai Chi does not use needles. It utilizes pressure points and universal energy to work with the meridians within people's bodies. If a person goes to an acupuncturist, they'll talk with you about the meridians and the physical meridians, or the meridians within the physical body. Tai Chi works with the emotional, mental, spiritual, and physical meridians. So, for example, some of the treatments might be to work with a brain injury. If a person had a severe chemical addiction, substance addiction, there are treatments that work with the brain to help bring the brain back into balance. There are treatments to work with the emotional aspect. There are treatments to work with the immune system. There are treatments to work with if someone has cancer. So there are over 4,000 treatments within Tai Chi, and when we attend class, we continue learning more advanced techniques and treatments.
How long have you been learning it?
I've been attending class since, 2008, and after about a year of learning, I was certified to work on the public. So in 2009, I started working on the public, and we're tested during every class we attend, which is, we have three classes a year, but the classes are like 4 or 5 days at a time. And then during each block of classes, we're tested on our proficiency.
Okay. I mean, that's a lot to learn. So I guess it's really a lifetime of learning, right?
It is definitely. It's a lifetime commitment if a person wants to continue offering Tai Chi to the public.
Right. I know that today you wanted to talk about the benefits of spiritual guidance. So what would you like to talk about with that? What would you like to focus on?
Well, I think a lot of people are not aware that they have spirit guides, and or they've heard the term spirit guides and might have an incorrect interpretation, or they might have a correct interpretation. Everyone's a little different. But in my experience, since I've been doing this since 2008, and of course I knew about my guides way before 2008, but what I have experienced is that guides are typically people. They've typically had a physical body before. Many people, if not everyone, has had a prior relationship with their guides, meaning they've known them in other time frames, in other manners. And the stronger a person's pathway, usually the stronger their guides are. Your guides are always going to know more than you. They're always going to have a higher level of consciousness, a higher level of awareness. Otherwise, how can they, guide you? They do fall within a set of parameters, meaning they cannot save you. They cannot take care of you, meaning fix things for you. And they cannot control you, because those are essentially controlling you. And they don't judge you. So you could go murder someone, and they're still not going to judge you as a bad and wrong person. They will try and guide you through the healing process, whatever occurs after that. But it's not their job to be your judge. Their job is to be in service of your soul. So to clarify that, it's not their job to be in service of your conscious mind. So when a person comes to an appointment and they're wanting guidance from their own guides, it is not their guide's job to tell you what you want to hear, to stroke your ego, or just to make you feel better. It is their job to be in service of your soul, and the soul does not desire that. It's not requesting that. The soul is requesting guidance, authentic guidance with integrity, so the truth. And it's important, I always tell people, it's important that when you come to me, that's what you're going to receive. You're going to receive the truth. And sometimes the truth is hard to hear, but guides are not invested in a person liking the information. They're not trying to be your best buddy. They're trying to guide you into a direction of healing, a direction of joy, a commitment, integrity. And that takes a lot of work sometimes for the person to be on that pathway.
Yes, and I think that when people come to you or others that do the same type of work that you do, it's really the ego that is questioning their future or what's going on in their life. And so I like the way you explain that. It's really for the betterment of the soul, and really the ego is not going to be something that these guides are going to address. Now, when we do ask for guidance, and is there a higher level of guidance that we can tap into?
Yes, everyone can tap into their own guidance. Everyone can communicate with their own guides. I always really reiterate that with people, that you never have to go to a medium to talk to your guides. It can be a little easier. There can be more clarification, because at least in my work, it's a direct dialogue. They're not just giving me symbols. Rarely actually do they give me symbols. They simply speak to me and I simply repeat the information word for word. They will sometimes present images to help illustrate something, especially when they're trying to describe a scenario in order to explain something. But it's, in session with me, it is a direct contact, but you don't have to come to a medium to communicate, because your guides can offer you dreams. They can offer you images. They can speak with you through your intuition. They can also have a conversation with you completely unconscious to you. So you could be, doing your thing throughout the day, running your errands, doing your work, whatever it might be, cooking a meal. And your guide could be actually standing right next to you, having a conversation with your unconscious, and unconsciously you are responding back to them. So you're having this back and forth conversation with them that you have no awareness of. Well, then later you might have a dream that is a reflection of that conversation. So it's important to really always pay attention to dreams if they feel significant. Sometimes dreams are a way to relieve stress. Sometimes dreams are a reflection of influence. And I would say that those are not so important to look at. But when you have a dream that's vivid, there's strong emotion, you remember it very clearly. Even if you don't remember the images very clearly, if you remember the feelings very clearly or the theme very clearly, those are the things to really pay attention to. And it could be a reflection of a conversation you had with your guide, or it could be a dream they were presenting to you in that way in order to communicate a message.
Okay. I find that, I have not developed any kind of psychic or clairvoyant ability, but I've learned to trust the messages that I get that I used to think were my own thoughts. And when I ask for help and I ask for, some guidance, often I'll get a thought that I'm learning to tell which ones are my own and which ones are not. But it's very subtle. It's very hard to know the difference when you have not developed this ability. But the more I trust, the more I get.
Right, exactly. And it takes practice and really learning how to feel. And that's what it comes down to for everyone. You have to learn how to feel. And when I say learn how to feel, I don't mean feeling your emotions. I mean feeling your intuition, feeling your body, feeling what's going on. When a person can learn how to feel deeply, they can know when they've come in contact with a virus before they even have symptoms. That's a strong feeling state that I'm talking about, where you know what's going on in your energy, your mind, your emotions, and your physical body.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that we had that ability. Very interesting. You are working on a book project called Silent Whispers, and this is about secret experiments that have and still are occurring on children who have passed. Would you like to talk about that?
Yes. I started the book Silent Whispers, I think it's been 2 years now. I've been working on it. I think I started in August 2014. But at the time, I didn't really have anything to write. I wasn't receiving information from anyone. But I knew I needed to write something. So it was suggested to me to just write about my own resistance. I had a lot of resistance in moving forward into something. I was kind of moving forward into the unknown, and I didn't know what I was walking towards, what I was going to be walking into, what it was going to be like, what I was going to see and hear, but I knew there was going to be something there, and I had a lot of resistance. I didn't really want to on a conscious level. But from a soul perspective, I needed to. So I did that. I started writing about the resistance. And as I did that, things began opening up. Things began changing. And I came to meet a non-physical man. I didn't know who he was at first. I came to learn who he was. But he died in the Holocaust in a concentration camp. He was Polish. His wife also died, but not in the same manner. I'm not yet clear on how she died, but he died in the concentration camp. But whatever he was doing when he was in the physical, meaning his own spiritual development and growth, when he passed, he ascended into a higher level of consciousness, meaning that he's very wise. He's very knowledgeable. He's very balanced. Any of those emotions a person might have for being tortured and killed, you know, resentment, anger, those types of emotions that many people take with them when they die, he doesn't carry any of that. So he came to me, and I asked him his name, and it sounded like Frank or Franck. And I later learned that his name, the short version of his name, is Franak, which is the short version of the Polish version of Frank, and the Polish version is really, really long. Okay. He started telling me that children were tortured and during the Holocaust, that they were experimented upon. But he said, Tammy, the reason this is so important is because it never ended. And he gave me more and more information. And then children started coming to me, children who had died after being tortured, for experiments, for the very purpose of being experimented upon under the guise of scientists. And they would tell me what was done to them. Sometimes they could tell me how long it had been going on, sometimes not. Sometimes they didn't have the awareness. They were so scared and in so much pain and so sad and so lost. I needed to help them process their pain so they could move into the light. So these are kids who didn't cross over, and they continued coming to me, and that is essentially the project of Silent Whispers.
Wow, that is so profound. Oh my gosh, that must have been very, very difficult. Very difficult.
It was.
I mean,
really,
you're still doing it, right?
Yeah. I am still doing it. I don't have as many kids coming to me in my home as I did, because that's where they were coming to me. How it kind of evolved is then I was told I needed to go to Montauk, New York, Camp Hero. And I did. I went with two other women, and we went there to investigate how many children are still stuck in that location. And there are a lot, mostly teenagers, but some younger ones. The thing is, they're still being controlled in the non-physical. They're still being upon, which just blew my mind. I'm like, how is that even possible? But, you know, I've had a major learning curve in this. I mean, I've just been learning so much that I never even thought could possibly exist. And it is still going on at Camp Hero, in Albuquerque, in Dulce, in Mount Shasta, in Jesus. Yeah, those are the places we've gone so far to investigate. So, and it's going on underground, and it's, again, for the purpose of science. And when the children cannot tell me exactly what they were being experimented on for, because sometimes they didn't know, I would have some other adult non-physicals who I trust who are very highly aware, and they would fill in the gaps for me and tell me what they were being tested on. So my book is based on that. And I've had some interruption with government because I'm investigating this.
So what you're saying is that live children in the physical world are still being experimented on. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
And
it started with...
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Go ahead.
Is this a government operation?
Government... Military, yes.
Okay.
And there's a lot more to it that I don't need to get into right now, but they've tapped my emails, they've tapped my phones. They even, when we went to, Albuquerque, they even came into the place we were staying physically. And then they also... do remote viewing where they're watching us kind of in a non-physical sense, like using their mental body to remote view what we're doing. I found it interesting that the CIA is actually behind this, but that the CIA has on their website, excuse me, documents about remote viewing. So the CIA even admits that they do remote viewing and that they've trained people for this. Well, they're still doing it. They're just that the CIA pretends that they stopped the project. Well, they also pretend that they stopped the project MKUltra, which anyone can research. It's also on the CIA's website. They were caught. They were ordered to end in the 1970s when documents leaked. Congress ordered them to end their project, and they said they did, but they didn't.
I'm speechless. And this is, it must take so much courage to push through this in so many different ways. Why children? And does this account for many children who are missing? I mean, why children?
You know, that's a good question about why children. The CIA project, MKUltra, which came out of World War II. A lot of people already know that our own government brought the Nazi scientists over to protect them, and they worked on NASA. They worked on the Manhattan Project. That is not very secret. People don't talk about it too much, but it's not really secret. Well, they continued their experiments on children, those scientists, and then it expanded into MKUltra and many other names. That's just one name. And they continue from there. So it did come out of World War II and Hitler. He was very interested in this, and he attracted like minds to continue doing this. He wanted reports brought back to him during that time frame. Why it's children? I think it has to do with a lot of things. One thing I was told is that they wanted children who had not yet reached puberty. There was an experiment on that. I can't remember off the top of my head what they were experimenting for, but they wanted children prepubescent. They also wanted people who were homosexual and heterosexual to see if they could change the sexuality. They have also been experimenting on chromosomes, male and female. They are also doing testing with taking skin samples, teeth samples. So a lot of these children have been horribly tortured, also a lot of mind control, desensitizing. So raping children in order to desensitize them so that they really lose all of their compassion, trying to get children to torture animals to remove compassion. Also injecting many different types of drugs to control the brain. There is one drug the children were given to shut down the part of the brain that controls compassion. And I have the name of that in my book. It's a scientific name. I can't remember it. But yeah, it continues on because they're getting something from it. They're getting research. They're able to research drugs that we take. I don't take drugs, but the drugs people take in pharmaceuticals. They're able to research different medications, forms of therapy. So in their minds, why stop?
Is the FDA and the drug companies in on this?
I'm not sure how much they actually know.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if some know.
Okay. I'm absolutely appalled. And I feel very
helpless.
Well,
you asked another question. You asked another question that is a great question. Does this account for many of the missing children? And yes, they will many times take runaways because people don't look for runaways. You know, once a kid is deemed a delinquent, I don't like using that label, but people do, and they run away, many times people say, well, you know, they're on their own, and they'll take those kids. A few teenagers who have come to me from more recent times, some came to me from the Holocaust, some have come to me from the 90s, some have come to me from the 2000s, and they have described what they were doing, some of them, mainly the teenagers, told me what they were doing when they were taken. And, you know, one was taken when he went to a bar. He was underage. He snuck in with a fake ID, I guess. He was drinking. And the bouncers caught him. They threw him out in the back. But he didn't get his coat with him. So he was cold. It was kind of rainy. And his friends forgot about him. He had gone there with a couple of his friends. So he was out in the back alone in the dark without his coat. And a van comes and picks him up. And I believe it was this teenager who told me he was allowed to call home once in order to create confusion. And then he died. I mean, they took him, they experimented upon him, they tortured him, and then they killed him. That's what he told me. So these kids are taken, and then some kids are taken out of abusive foster homes. Some foster homes sell their kids to these people. Some are taken, and some parents, it's not just foster homes, some parents just don't want their kids, and they give one or more of their kids to the people who are requesting it.
I don't know how you do this work because I'm feeling sick. I really am. I'm feeling, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Is this,
The point of it is, mm-hmm.
Okay. Is this,
no, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Is this verifiable?
Anyone can verify that MKUltra remote viewing has gone on. Obviously, the CIA does not admit that they're still doing it, but they admit that they did do it. They don't admit to the depth of what they did. They do admit that they gave people LSD to study the effects on the brain, but they don't give a great amount of detail publicly anyway.
Okay. And we're under the impression, the public, general public is under the impression that people submitted to this of free will. But now you're saying that people have not.
Right. No, the ones that I have spoken to, none of them were doing it under their free will.
Okay. And so how many children would you say have come to you? Because there have to be hundreds of thousands of these children.
Yeah, man. I don't know. Maybe like if I want to count the ones who came to me without me actually going anywhere, without going on these trips we've gone on with the other two women, I would say, I don't know, close to 100. I could only listen so much. And there were definitely times where I just stopped listening. And I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't hear any more stories. But the reason I continue doing it is because they deserve to be heard. And they deserve to be heard regarding what happened to them. Not only that, it helps them process their pain. They're stuck. They are so glued to their trauma, they can't see anything. So many times they were brought to me by someone else, another non-physical who had the awareness. Otherwise, they're completely stuck. And when we go to these trips, when we went to Dulce and the Santa Fe area and Albuquerque and Mount Shasta and Montauk, the kids are kind of in that location, and we're able to talk with them and help some of them cross over. But even in those points in time, some of them are still too scared to cross over, and they just go back to, you know, wherever they're being held.
So they're ghosts, actually, right? They're stuck.
Yes.
They haven't transitioned to the spiritual world. And they're stuck, and they're just haunting these areas?
Yes, sometimes. They I'm not sure how much they walk around when we're not there. I only know the ones that I can talk to when I am there. And I also have been told by someone else that we don't actually communicate with all of the kids there, meaning that we'll be talking to these kids over here and hearing their story and helping them cross over. But then there could be these kids over here that we're not seeing because they're behind me or they're hiding in the trees somewhere, but they're listening. And they still receive the benefit of what they're hearing and they move on. So there's so many kids present in these places, but they do get very controlled.
So are there spirits that are of this evil type of nature that are controlling them?
Yes, there are some other, let's just say, entities that are involved as well, that some people are aware of and some people are not. It's not, it's a big part of it's government, but it's not just government.
This is the heaviest thing I think I've ever heard. I mean, wow. And thank you for doing this work. I don't know how you do it, but I guess when something is meant for you to do, you do it. You rise to that occasion. And how could you turn away these children? How could you possibly turn them away? Okay. Let's move on to something a little less heavy because I don't know what to do with this. I really don't know what to do with this, but I am going to look into this. What about the book, the memoir that you wrote called Loving Connor? What is that about?
That is about my daughter and my journey. Well, mostly my journey, but then my daughter comes into it. But it starts off with my first marriage. It was abusive. I made a poor choice in marrying my first husband. He was a very compassionate person when he wasn't drinking. And so he could not control his alcohol, and he would become fairly violent. He only hit me once, and I say only because the majority of the violence was to the walls and to the doors and verbal. But when my daughter was about a month old, I didn't want her to get hurt. And so I left. And the book takes you on my journey through poverty, taking care of my daughter, working two or three jobs, going to college, and then meeting my current husband like 18 years ago. We've been married 18 years. And then it quickly transitions into my daughter's adolescence, and she was very angry that her father didn't want her. And I was trying to help her work through that anger, but it got the better of her, and she ended up in a relationship with an abusive boy that was way too old for her. She got pregnant, and this was all around when my abilities were developing rapidly as well. Well, we found out that the soul of the fetus that she was pregnant with was a very, very angry individual. And it was imperative that we work with the soul during her pregnancy so that after the baby was born, she didn't have a very angry child on her hands, like very, very angry. You ever hear these stories about a person who has a baby and this child is like 4 or 5 years old and they're just outrageous in terms of their violence
yes.
and their anger?
And there's
you
no
wonder
explanation,
what happened.
Right? There's no logical explanation for it, yes.
Exactly. So this would have been one of those examples had we not worked with him. So it was all about loving Connor. His name's Connor. And I learned his history. I learned about his prior life, why he was so angry. He had killed himself and why he had killed himself. And so when we were talking with him, he was just spewing anger and hate. And so I had to work with him like I would with any child. I was a teacher for many years with any child. And it got a little bit better. Not great, but a little bit better. And then we knew exactly what to do after he was born. And I'm really glad to say that we have a very loving little boy. He's 5 years old now. And, well, my daughter's raising him, but I'm around him a lot. There are still a couple of concerns in terms of his brain, but and how he processes, and there are certain things he can't have. He cannot consume because it really triggers behaviors in him. But for the most part, well, entirely, he's a very loving individual. He's very willing to give love and receive love, and I'm very proud of him.
That's an amazing story. Is it true that suicides recycle back into the physical world quickly?
Well, everyone comes back into the physical world. As far as quickly, not always, because when a person takes their own life, many times they get stuck in that trauma. And that's why I always advocate, well, a couple of things. Suicide never works. Because you just get caught up in the trauma and your own emotions, and now you don't have a physical body to get up and move, get up and go somewhere. You don't have that anymore. So now you're stuck in your emotional body and your mental body and all the trauma that was already there, plus some. And then also execution. I don't agree with execution for the same reason. They get caught up in their trauma, and then they try to attach to people energetically.
Well,
a lot of people don't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, have you put that out there? Have you written about that?
I have not, because I haven't really studied it. I mean, I know it happens because I know I've worked with a lot of people who have what's called cords in for Tai Chi treatments. I can remove energetic cords or energetic attachments. And usually a person is corded or attached to a non-physical person who has had a prior relationship with them. So not a complete stranger, usually not a complete stranger, but it can happen. A lot of people who have a really strong substance addiction have a cord. What happens is a person dies. They were horribly addicted to a substance, but even though they no longer have the physical body, they still have their addiction, and they still crave their high, but they can't get it now. So they attach to an addict to get their high that way. So they get their high energetically through a physical person. And then once you have an attachment, and it, if it's not removed, you could then have a second attachment, a third attachment, a fourth attachment. So a lot of people who are in mental hospitals, psychiatric wards, have multiple cords and attachments. But no, I wouldn't write about it unless I had actually studied it. But I do know it happens.
Okay. So is this what we would call the dark side?
I would say it's definitely a dark part of humanity.
Okay. Okay. I'm getting quite an education. Do you enjoy your work, Tammy?
I do. I enjoy it greatly. You know, when people come to an appointment to receive guidance and they send me a letter or they write a review on my I have an online booking site called GenBook, and GenBook automatically sends a review request, and some people will write a review, and I read those, or they'll send me a letter about how much their guides were able to help them or how beneficial the session was. Some people have told me that they were in therapy for 8 years and they had 1 hour session with me and it was more useful and more helpful than 8 years of therapy. So I don't get a lot of that type of feedback, but I've gotten a lot of feedback in how helpful the information was and how grateful they are. So I love it. And the Tai Chi energy work has also been very helpful, especially with people who, when I do remove a cord that was very toxic, and the person feels better instantly after it's gone, and they're able to maintain that feeling and that healing. It's very, I'm very grateful for the assistance I have received. I'm very grateful for the learning I have had.
And I'm very grateful for you and the work that you do. I think this is so very different than anyone I've ever talked to who is in the line of work that you do or has the type of gifts with plural that you do. And it's not easy work, but it is so important. And thank you for sharing all this information. I can't imagine how you do all that you do, but I guess there's ups and there's downs. And your work is very important. And you've been brought here, I guess, to do this. This is your mission. So thank you from all of us. It's been wonderful having you as my guest today. I so appreciate you being on with me. Our time is running out, so I have to say goodbye. I could probably talk to you all day because I'm so I feel so deeply involved, you know, in all of this now. But we do have to say goodbye. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And can I give my website?
I hope you will. Yes.
It's empowermentthroughhealing.org, and there are links there to my blog, but also my blog is separate, thesilentwhisperinthedark.com.
Okay, perfect. And I actually have those links right up on your show page. So for those who are listening, you can go right to the show page and click on the links. It will take you directly to Tammy Urbanek's, the links that she just the website she just provided for you. So I wish you a wonderful day, and thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randi Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randigfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randi G. Fine.